My name is John Kiernan. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I will give some quick stats just so you can know how old I am. I've been in program for 42 years. I have been abstinent for 28, and I am maintaining about 105, 110-pound weight loss for most of that time. And since you can't, help but notice there was two different numbers between 48 and 20, 42 and 28, there was a lot of relapsing going on. And a lot of times I speak a lot about relapsing, but today I want to, mainly I'll give a quick story. I don't want to spend a lot of time on my food log, but just so you know, I earned my seat. I grew up, I was a compulsive eater for as long as I can remember. I was a fat kid in school. I was the child of two different alcoholics who split when I was very young, and I went back and forth between them. And one of the troubles that happens is that you pick up some really bad habits. It's called bad modeling. I'm a drug and alcohol counselor, and in that field they talk about bad modeling. And one of the things you get from parents who've got that kind of personality is first of all, we don't talk about our feelings at all. We'll talk to you about baseball. We'll talk to you about politics. We'll talk about anything, but we don't talk about how we are in here. The other thing would happen is be really crazy stuff would go on and insane stuff. And then the next day, everybody's fine. Everything's fine. And I got that one. And then to me, the most important one was, parents do things to kids that they're totally inadvertently, and it's not like they say anything to the kids, but the kids watch how the parents are. And my parents would get upset, and then they'd say, "I need a something. I need a drink. I need a cigarette. I need a pill." And so, at a very early age, I learned, oh, if I don't like how I'm feeling in here, there's something out there I can put in here that will make everything better. And for me, at that very, very early age, it was food. And I grew up in a very chaotic household. I did a lot of moving. Anybody who's an AA has heard the expression geographic cures. My mother was the queen of geographic cures. So we moved like constantly. I was in an ACA meeting once, and a speaker was saying, "I moved six times by the time I got to the sixth grade." And I turned to the person next to me. I said, "I think I actually moved six times in the sixth grade." And I wasn't joking about it. But the only reason I mentioned that is there was never any constant. I couldn't hold on to friends because I'd be gone and things like that. And so there were only two constants in my life that got me through. And one was called sugar, and the other was called salt, or actually salt grease combination. And I went back and forth, repeat as needed, in alternate ways. I could actually eat too much and then stop, and then I would have to go back and go to salt and then back. Anyway, this was my way to cope. I had no other coping mechanisms. And like everybody else I hear here, I didn't want to be that way. And the byproduct of compulsive eating is being overweight. And I've been an overweight adult. I've been an overweight kid. Trust me, overweight adult is better. Kids are brutal. At a certain age, they are just, they're, I mean, I can look at it now, understanding psychology. They're all trying to figure themselves out. And one of the ways they can feel better about themselves is by finding somebody else to pick on. And that was me. I was picked on verbally. I was beat up because I was fat. And, if you have enough people telling you you're a piece of garbage, you begin to believe you're a piece of garbage. You just can't help it, and so how do I take your feelings of lousy about myself? Eat some more, right? I don't, this is a story everybody's heard. And again, it's not like I wanted this. I, like everybody, I tried every kind of diet, in the world. And when I first came to OA, I used to say I tried every diet in the world and none of them worked. But the reality is I tried every diet in the world and they all worked once for a little while because I'm a good little student. You give me my syllabus, I'll follow your whatever you tell me to do. But the trouble is I got the brain of a compulsive eater who then starts looking for the end arounds or loopholes or whatever you want to say. And so then I would have lose some weight and then gain it back and then some. I had a sponsee who once said, it's not like I didn't think of it as much as going on diets as I did sending my weight out for reinforcements, which I was so funny. So I just had no luck in keeping weight off, and I went through high school, didn't date, didn't go to the prom, was part of the misfits that hung out together. And I was never going to drink because I saw what my parents did. I was blessed with a good brain and I did a lot of reading on alcoholism. And I saw, oh, you know what? Children of alcoholics tend to either become alcoholics or marry alcoholics. And I'm going to do neither of those. And so I never drank until I was at near the end of high school. And then, you know, I'm an overweight boy, I don't know, 18, maybe 19, 18 probably. And, I'm full of hormones and I want to meet the opposite sex, except I'm overweight and I have no, you know, I couldn't just even talk to the opposite sex. I have no sister, so I had no help in that, you know, how to do that. And then I found this magic elixir called alcohol that when I drank it, I would become like James Bond. All of a sudden, I'd have all this self-assuredness and that. But the trouble is that you know, it was that dancing with the gorilla, right? You know, you stop when the gorilla wants you to stop. And then I wouldn't go well. But what happened was this is the one time in my life I was able to lose weight because essentially I sort of changed over to the liquid version of sugar. And the way I lost weight was just so crazy. I would just not eat for 6 days at a time, and then I'd binge one night, and then I'd go and not eat for 6 days, and then binge again. And you know, if you're an 18-year-old boy, you know, you had the metabolism of a hummingbird, then you will lose weight. It's not very healthy. But one of the things I realized in looking back is, you know, having come to the program, is there was part of me that knew. There was a part of me that knew there was no dimmer switch there. There was only an on and off. You know, and the only way I could maintain any kind of weight was to just keep it off as much as I could until, you know, the tiger took over. I got to a normal weight. I had my first relationship, and then unfortunately, you know, alcohol took over. There's a line from F. I think it's F. Scott Fitzgerald says, "The man takes the drink, and then the drink takes the drink, and then the drink takes the man," and that was me. And then alcohol took over. All the weight I had lost, having gotten down to a normal body weight for about 10 minutes, I gained back. I lost my relationship, and I was off and running with the alcohol. This is an AA story, so I'm not going to go all into that, except to say that I found my way into AA. I finally found a way to conquer my absolute, you know, I was going to be, I'm an atheist. I'm not going to have anything to do with you people with the God, but I found a way to make it work that worked for me. I'm mainly the person told me, don't worry about it. If you have trouble with it, you leave it out. But just try and keep an open mind. And because he said it that way, it made all the difference. I was able to become, you know, a seeker of the truth or whatever you want to say. And I found something that works for me today. It's certainly not the religion I was born with. I think we all get a hand-me-down religion and we sort of have to tear that one down and put up a new one. It could be the same one, but you know, it'll be ours then. That was my introduction to the steps. At that point, I think it was at my heaviest, and I started doing crazy relapsing again. I started doing the crazy dieting, and I relapsed in that program. And when I came back, by then I'd heard of OA, and I said, no, I got to do OA too. You know, the two. And you know, when you come to AA, they're, oh, don't worry, have a chocolate bar or whatever. No, I have to do that. And so, you know, I was able to work both programs, and I fell in love immediately because all of a sudden everything made sense. I couldn't understand. I'm gifted with this wonderful brain that does all these things, but it's of no use when it comes to my disease. And then it's of no use. You know, when I was in the middle of my worst relapse part, I could quote you huge chunks of the big book, you know, and so knowledge of our disease alone doesn't cure us. But on that first time around, you know, the abstinence fairy hit me. It came off really easy. It was so simple. I followed it. I was, you know, on a food plan, and I couldn't understand why everybody had such problems with it. And I always say this is the one time in my life I was actually went into a little anorexic phase. And what that was about was, Again, I'm a compulsive eater. I have been a bulimic. I have been an exercise bulimic. And this one little time, what it was about was I had this great idea what goal weight was going to be. It was going to be the answer to all of my problems. I was going to like myself. Everything was going to be wonderful. And so I had this number. And sure enough, you tell me to follow that food plan, I will lose weight. And I got to that number. And you know what? Nothing changed. I didn't like myself anymore. I wasn't happy with life. I wasn't any of that. And so, genius that I am, oh, it must be another 5 pounds. So I lose another 5 pounds. I still don't like myself. Okay, another 10 pounds. And finally, I've got people coming up. Are you all right? Because I was so skinny. And I just want to say, I think I had to do that with my brain. I had to see with my own eyes what people told me a long time ago, which is that there's no number on a scale that's going to get me to like myself. And if I'm trying to set my happiness based on a number on a scale, it's just never going to be there. There'll always be a different number. I did really well for a while, and then I fell off the deep end in terms of relapse. And I spent quite a while trying to get it back. Again, I'm a drug and alcohol counselor, and there's a line in the addiction that talks about the addict is always chasing the first high, trying to get that wonderful feeling again. Well, I realized I was chasing the first abstinence. The first abstinence was easy, it was simple, I didn't have to work at it, and it just wasn't going to be that way this time around. I had to work my butt off for it. And also, looking back, by the way, I realized that why it was so easy that first time. It was just another one of those diets. Remember, I told you every diet I had worked until they didn't. And that's what this was the first time around. It was another one of those diets, and it worked. But then I had such trouble. I was living on the East Coast. We moved out to the West Coast. The program just fell apart so badly. And it took quite a while. We don't have time for it today. It took me a long time to get my abstinence together. And thank God, when I say I got it together, it was given to me. Why on the week where I finally was able to, hold in there, it worked in the last, I don't know how many weeks in a row it hadn't. Again, I think there's a gift somewhere. And so I always talk about it. I can't commit to staying abstinent, but I can commit to putting as many impediments between me and that next compulsive bite as possible. I'm doing a whole group of meetings now on the first compulsive bite, because we used to talk about that so much more. Because if you get down to it, it all is going to come back to that first compulsive bite, no matter what's going on. I was always told you take care of that one, the rest of them, take care of themselves. So fast forward, I worked the program. It was no longer, when I first came in, I said I came in at two OAs. OA number one was the one I was in the first time, which was, it was all about meetings. Go to meetings, meet people, talk about, talk to each other, go out for, fellowship afterwards, get on the phone, gossip with each other. No steps, no big bug, no nothing. And you got the results you would expect from that. Next time around, though, I had to work. That whole nothing changes if nothing changes. And I really needed to change because I was told the same person will use again. And it was true. And it was a long journey to get better. I also will put in a plug for outside help. Bill Wilson believed in outside help, and I needed to keep the food down, but then I needed to find out what was going on inside. And through those two things, I've changed my life. And I want to talk a little before we end about the reading, because I think it's so important. Am I satisfied to be the way I am? Today I am, I am not, oops, I accidentally hit the mouse and the Zoom went away. I am okay today. And one of the places I just love is I just want to read this paragraph. It's on page 417 in the big book. And it's not the acceptance paragraph that everybody thinks I'm about to say. It's the one that comes right after it. It says, Shakespeare said, all the world's a stage and all the men and women merely players. He forgot to mention, I was also the chief critic. I was always able to see the flaw in every person, every situation, and I was always glad to point it out because I knew you wanted perfection as much as I did. AA in acceptance has taught me there's a bit of good in the worst of us, a bit of bad in the best of us, that we're all children of God and we all have a right to be here. When I complain about me or about you, I am complaining about God's handiwork. I'm saying I know better than God. And I read that for the longest time about me, my having a real judgmental quality, you know, because when I complain about you, I'm complaining about, you know, God's handiwork. But that's not what it says. It says when I complain about me or you, I'm complaining about God's handiwork. And I have to remember what that means to me today is I'm right where I'm supposed to be. You know, I want to be better. You know, heck, I want to be perfect. But there's a reason I am where I am today with whatever's going on. And maybe it's just to give me more empathy and compassion for somebody who's having, you know, the same kind of things. You know, I talk about in the groups I run about, I really feel that we're all just these little kids running around in adult suits, you know? And the thing is, none of us got the manual, you know, the manual on how to do life, how to get along with people, how everything interact and all this wonderful stuff. We didn't get it. And so we spend our lives muddling through trial and error. And you know, my errors affect you, your errors affect me. And then we also always look back at all of our errors and beat the hell out of ourselves about them. And I had to look at, you know, the me that from when I was younger, you know, that I'm not particularly proud of and go, this was the result of, you know, a kid who had got raised by wolves and didn't get the manual. And as a result, I've hit a different place in my life about that. You know, in the mental health field, they'll talk a lot about self-love. And I have a bit of a sort of a cynical streak. You know, I joke, I'm an alcoholic who was originally from New York, so I'm very cynical about everything. And when I would hear the phrase self-love, I had trouble with that. But the phrase self-acceptance, accepting that I'm a human being and that I'm flaws and all, I want to be better. As long as I am trying to be the best person I can be, you know, I believe that's sort of the answer. You know, I do these things called special editions on Sunday for this Vision for You group. I'm just finishing one up. I'm going to do a week from tomorrow. And I said, you know, if you go through life trying to be the best person you can, and know you're doing the best you can, and I'll wrap up. If you're
it's
doing
3 minutes left, John.
Okay. Am I done or is that three? No, I'm done, right?
No, 3 minutes. 3 minutes.
Oh, 3 minutes. Okay. Oh, okay. Cool. Then I don't have to speak so fast. I feel like if you go through life just trying to be the best person you are, and you know you're not trying to hurt anybody, in a way you become bulletproof. You know, people can say things to you and they can say hurtful things to you, but there's a part of you that knows, okay, this isn't true. You know, the only time people's words can hurt you is if there's a part of you that believes it, you know? And if you get to a place of knowing, gee, I'm a good person, I'm wouldn't, you know, sure, I'm going to make mistakes and I will be the first to give a 10th step whenever I've done that. But it changed. And it's, again, I realized I'm actually pretty okay, you know, today with who I am. You know, I'm not going to pull it out right now, but I was reading this little prayer it has that it's a guy named Thomas Merton who wrote about, you know, and then I'll give you the Cliff's Notes on it. It's, you know, I try to be the best I am today. I'm trying to follow God's will today. I don't know if I am. I just know that if I am trying to do that and I'm trying to be the best person, that's more important than actually being the best, that I am just trying the best I can. And when you do that and you know that's, you know, the way you will feel better, it's amazing. And again, I'll just wrap with this talk I'm giving next week. It's all about ego. And when I came in, I heard ego as, you know, the surface definition of ego. You know, it's about being, you know, you know, it's being egotistical and having a self-aggrandizing and all that. But now I get the ego is really just an accurate ability to see who I am in the world. And you know, that word humility in the seventh step, I always heard that and sort of heard humiliation or humble. And I had to become like Gandhi. And, you know, and somebody said a long time ago, humility is just having an accurate view, an objective view of yourself in the world. You know, you're not at the top of the heap, you're not at the bottom of the heap, you're just another human being, flaws and all. And the thing is, once I could get that, it changed both how I saw things and it made me more teachable. You know, that line at the beginning of this thing about, you know, and it's dovetails to what's said in the spiritual experience, contempt prior to investigation. Now I can do that. I can be able to say, you know, I can learn from other people. There's a great line from Confucius that says, you know, an intelligent person can learn from their mistakes, but a person with wisdom can learn from other people's mistakes. And before I came, you know, did work in this program, you know, I hear about your mistake, and part of me is like, well, no, I'm smarter than that. That'll never happen to me. And now I know, hey, it can ha if that can happen to so and so, it can happen to anybody. And all I can just say is all due to programs, it's all due to steps, it's all due to Big Book, and all due to you guys out there, because none of this stuff I do is original. So thanks for letting me share.